Well, it's time to feel a little bit warmer anyway, and that means if we're going to feel warmer, we're going to talk about food, and we're going to talk about lots of different things with Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us every Monday at this time. We rebroadcast Arthur on the weekend and also during the week. You can find him 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand, Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Well, ladies and gentlemen, here he is. Good morning, Arthur.
And good morning. Well, I have good weather news. Did you read this piece in the Times over the weekend? Who knows what day? How global warming is making Germany a better wine-growing country.
Well, that's good to know.
No, it's very good news for lovers of German wine. I'm only afraid it's going to make it too sweet. They keep saying how, oh, you know, that now they're getting full ripening in Germany. It's, by the way, it's caused havoc on other parts of their economy, but at least they'll be able to drink away their troubles. Anyway, I cook away my troubles, it seems. I'm in it's not the constant cooking. I love the constant cooking. It's just the constant cleaning up that, at this point in the morning, I've already cleaned the kitchen from yesterday. So now we start all over again.
Never ending.
Never ending. It's my late great friend Barbara Kafka used to call it the continuity of the kitchen. and a euphemism if there ever was. Well, I'm doing a continuity of the kitchen today, actually, because yesterday I sat next to my pot for 3 hours and made a sensational pork ragu. I say I sat by my pot. I followed the advice of my great, she's not my mentor because I never met her, but she wrote the Bible of Neapolitan cooking called La Cucina Napolitana, Gian Carola Francesconi, and I'm sure I've quoted this before, but I always think about it. She says, you know, when you make a ragu, you've got to, it takes 3 hours minimum, get a good book and sit and read, but not such a good book that you forget to stir the pot every 15 minutes. So that's what I did yesterday. And my result is I have another meal today. Besides that, we were only three for dinner last night. Besides that, I have lots of leftover sauce. I also have some leftover spaghetti that I already sauced that we didn't eat. I made a pound of pasta for three people, knowing full well it was too much. But I like the idea of having the leftover sauced spaghetti because today I can turn it into a frittata. And I don't know what else I'm going to put in this frittata. Usually I have some little scrap of cheese to dice and throw into the spaghetti. I'm not sure I have it, or even a little piece of meat. I will see. But here I am to talk about another thing I probably have mentioned, if not outlined, on the air before, but it deserves re-mentioning. It's something I call magic chicken. It's actually a Chinese cooking technique. And this is to cook an entire chicken and for use in other dishes. Let's say chicken salad. It's great for chicken salad because you end up with really moist breast meat. And it's also good for a whole range of creamed chicken dishes. Now, very old-fashioned, so old-fashioned, it's from the turn of two centuries ago, meaning late 1800s, early 1900s, probably certainly into the 20s or so. Because just the other day, I don't remember if it was it was some news thing, something on the news. And they mentioned, oh, let's go to 21 for chicken hash. So this dish is still on the menu at 21 from the days when it was a speakeasy during Prohibition. And it's nothing but cream chicken hash. It's not hash at all, not to me, except that the chicken is cut up, so I guess you could say it's hash. But this was a creamed chicken was one of the most popular things in America. From, I would say, it must be the 1880s on, into my lifetime. Now, I'm sure, Marshall, you remember really bad cafeteria Chicken a la King.
It wasn't bad, though, because, like I said, I was lucky. When we at Sharon Center School, we had two incredible women cooks, and they cooked everything from scratch. And so your cream chicken and even your cream chip beef wasn't bad.
Well, there you
go. Yeah.
And, you know, and it's a very inexpensive dish. If you've got good broth, it's sensational, too. So this magic chicken method results not only in really good, moist chicken meat, but it also, and I just saw something the other day that made me think about this. Anyway, it also results in some very good cooking broth. I wouldn't say it's soup. It's not chicken soup. It's not hearty enough. It doesn't have any gelatin in it because, whatever, you have to cook things long and slow to get the gelatin out. So, but it's very good cooking broth, and if you want to cook it down a little bit and make it a little bit stronger later, you can do that too, and you could use it as a base of, I guess you could do chicken noodle soup in that, or stracciatella.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Is chicken a la King the same as cream chicken?
Well, so this is it. Chicken a la King is one of a zillion recipes for cream chicken. It's also, let's think back to Thanksgiving. I was obsessed then with turkey tetrazzini.
That's right.
Now, turkey tetrazzini is yet another form of cream chicken. So, and then there's another one that was very popular in our lifetime, chicken divan, which was chicken and cream sauce with, by the way, these dishes invariably had grated Parmesan cheese, which I thought was very advanced and probably considered very elegant, even maybe exotic, at the turn of the 20th century, meaning from the 19th to the 20th. They're all forms of cream chicken, basically white sauce with whatever plus chicken. In the case of tetrazzini, it's, if I recall, it's peas and mushrooms. And the sauce has a good shot of dry sherry in it. I use Fino sherry because that's what I drink. But I bet you in the old days, it was actually a slightly sweeter sherry than Fino, which is the driest. And chicken divan is cream chicken on a bed of broccoli with Parmesan cheese. It's a little bit more elaborate than that in the original recipe. By the way, a lot of this history is in my book, New York City Food. Now, the one that I love is Chicken a la King, which has pimento and mushroom in it. But here's the deal. The reason I love it is not the recipe, is that it was created in Brooklyn. Chicken a la King was named after the owner of the Brighton Beach Hotel, where it was most likely created. At the end of the 1800s, Brighton Beach was an elegant resort for people who lived in Manhattan. It was far. The subway did not get to Brighton Beach until the 1920s, or Coney Island until the 1920s. So in the 1880s, you were going to the country from Manhattan in a horse and carriage, probably. And Brooklyn was the seat of horse racing in America at that time. In fact, where I live in Park Slope, 8th Avenue, between Flatbush and I guess you would say First Street, which is a bunch of named streets, used to be called Sportsman's Row because the jockeys, trainers, and owners, who were the elite sportsmen of the day, lived on this street and built some of these very elegant brownstones and mansions. There are actual big mansions here. Now they've been divided into apartments, but they're still nice apartments. Anyway, back to cream chicken and magic chicken. Here's the method for cooking the chicken to do all these things with. I'll name some other things besides chicken salad. You take a 4.5-pound chicken. That means a roasting chicken, a big chicken. It could be even, the one that I did the other day was 4.88 pounds. And I did one a few weeks ago, which was under 4.5 pounds, but over four. And the timing was the same. So you put this chicken in a big pot where it will fit comfortably but not tightly and not too loosely, and cover it with cold water. Just cover it. I'm not measuring the water. It depends on the pot. But just cover it. You know, it should have, you know, just dust. Means just. Into this big pot of chicken and water, put 2 tablespoons of salt and about a rounded teaspoon of peppercorns. Cover the pot. You have to have a pot with a cover for this. Cover the pot and put it over high heat. And as soon as the steam comes up from under the lid, that means that the contents, the liquid, is boiling. As soon as you see steam coming up from under the lid, turn off the heat and let it sit for 3 hours. Don't touch the pot. Don't take the cover off to check it. Don't do anything. Forget that you have this pot on the stove for 3 hours, at which point the chicken will be cooked. Everything will still be warm, by the way. It won't have, it's not dangerous in any way. I've done this so many times. It's not dangerous. And after 3 hours, you can take the chicken out of the pot. The way I like to do it is I take my 2-pronged big meat fork and get inside the cavity and let it all drain out into the pot. By the way, this broth is relatively lean because you haven't really cooked the chicken. You know, it's relatively lean. You may want to skim it the next day, but it's hardly worth the effort. It's so little fat. And now you can use your chicken. Now, so something I'm not even sure if I read it or saw it, but somebody had some flabby-skinned chicken, which is what you're going to get here, and fried the chicken skin to make crackling. Doesn't that sound good?
That sounds really
good. I haven't tried this yet. But, you know, you're going to have to take the skin off one way or the other. I don't think anybody really wants to eat boiled chicken skin. My father liked it. But my mother would stick it under the broiler for a minute or two. I'm not sure if she basted it with anything to make it brown. Maybe she did. Maybe with some of the chicken fat that was skimmed off the soup. We used to call this soup chicken. It was totally cooked out and horrible, and I never wanted to eat. This sounds like my phone is dying.
No, you sound fine here.
Well, I know, but I just heard a beep in my ear.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Yeah, so if I suddenly go dead, everybody, please understand. But you did get the recipe for Magic Chicken.
Yes, we did.
Okay, so you can, you know, you don't need me to tell you how to make a bechamel and cream chicken and whatever, but here's one that I love to do when I have a chicken like this, is something called moussakan, is a Middle Eastern dish. I would say Jordanian Syrian dish. And you need one ingredient that's hard to find, which is sumac. And I'm not talking about the sumac that grows alongside the road everywhere in the northwest corner. It is a weed. I was going to say it's almost a weed. It is a weed. No, this is related to that sumac. And by the way, I have harvested that sumac. And I've made a tea with it, which is what the Native Americans did with it. It's sort of like lemonade. But the sumac that I buy is from I don't know where it comes from, but somewhere in the Middle East. And for 4 cups of slice, I'm going to give you this before my phone dies. 4 cups of sliced onion, sautéed in 2 to 3 tablespoons of olive oil. Once they wilt down after about 10 minutes, sprinkle them with 2 tablespoons of sumac, some salt, and pepper for good measure, but not a whole lot, and keep sautéing until the onions are really soft, and that's it. So you take your, and now the other ingredient is lavash. Now, lavash is not so hard to find. I noticed lately that a lot of what they sell as bread for wraps is actually lavash. They'll call it wrap bread or lavash. Somewhere in small print on the label, it might say lavash. That's the ideal bread. But if you can't find lavash, pita is good too, dried out pita. In fact, split the loaves and let them sit out and dry out a little bit, because then you're going to put them on a platter, or the lavash, dried out or not, on a platter, and sprinkle it with some of your nice broth resulting from cooking this chicken. Cover the lavash with the shredded chicken, make big pieces, just pull it off the bone, as much as you need for your meal, and your bread, cover the bread, and then put on top of that your sautéed onions in sumac. And you can stick this under the broiler for a minute or two. I sort of like it when the bread gets some little charred edges, but you don't have to. You could just do it that way. But then it gets topped with, I'm going to call it yogurt sauce, but it's really just yogurt. What I do is I take Greek yogurt, you know, the strained yogurt, and add a little bit of water to it, like reconstituting it back to... It's not the same as using plain yogurt, this kind of yogurt. And then you drizzle that over the top of your onions with sumac. And then on top of that, gilding the lily, we can put sautéed pine nuts, or if you don't have pine nuts, walnuts will do. Coarsely chopped, or as I'm taken to doing lately, just breaking them up with my fingers and hand, on top of the yogurt and the onions with the sumac and this moist shreds of chicken, and underneath this bread that's been moistened with delicious chicken broth. I'm trying to sound like a food TV here.
You're doing a fine job.
Pardon me?
I said you are doing a fine job. I like the gilding the lily part.
Yeah, gilding the lily. So, and speaking of gilding the lily, the Parmesan cheese that seemed to be ubiquitous at the beginning of the 20th century, I'm not sure why. Maybe it's because the Italians who arrived here in the late 19th century craved products that they could not afford at home. Like good olive oil, or not even good olive oil, just olive oil, and cheeses that literally were beyond their means, like Parmigiano. Because in the south of Italy, which is where almost all the immigrants came from, it was Pecorino country, it wasn't Parmigiano country, and that was a luxury product until after World War II. So that may be why that this Parmesan cheese, who knows if it really was, I mean, I haven't done the research, somebody... And that's about it. So, by the way, this chicken is great for other uses besides what I just, the cream chicken, the sumac. It's called moussakan chicken. I am taken lately, you know, to making fried rice. So I think leftover chicken is a great protein to put into your fried rice along with peas and scallions and maybe some leftover other vegetable that you have. I'm finding fried rice is a very good medium for all kinds of leftovers. And one of the thing you have to remember about fried rice is the rice needs to be old. So I've taken...
How old?
To
couple
save,
days?
Oh, it could be days old.
Yeah.
I've taken to saving my takeout Chinese rice to only to make fried rice with it a few days later.
Can I ask
it's
you
not a bad idea, by the way. Speaking of which, that is... continuity of the kitchen, as my friend Barbara Kafka used to call it.
Can I ask you one more question about... Can I ask you one more chicken?
You can ask me five more questions. I think we have 10 minutes.
How big of a step is it from chicken a la king to chicken pot pie?
It is potatoes. I made a mixture the other day with this, intending to make chicken pot pie, and then got lazy and decided I wasn't making pastry, and we didn't need it anyway. So what I did was I took my broth from the magic chicken, and I recooked it with diced carrot, celery, and potato. And when they were all tender, I drained it. I turned the broth into what in French you call velouté, or white sauce, basically making a roux, butter and flour, adding my now flavored broth, and making a wonderful sauce. I put in just a tiny shot of sherry because I'm in that mode, but really not as much as I would put in if I was making tetrazzini, for instance. And just a tiny shot. And then I put all those things back in, and then I mixed in a couple of cups of shredded chicken, or pulled chicken, I would call it, and it was delicious, even not with a pastry, and it was, in fact, pot pie filling. In fact, there's a soup, a winter place here in Park Slope that sells soup. In the summer, it's an ice cream parlor. In the winter, it's a soup place. And they have one called pot pie soup, which is basically a slightly thinner version of pot pie filling, but without the pie. Yep. It's very good.
Well, I think if you've got great filling, I mean, all the dough gets in the way sometimes of the ingredients inside a chicken pot pie.
You're saying that?
This is very good on waffles. I'm in waffle mode lately.
You've mentioned...
So I make waffle... Pardon me?
You've mentioned that. Are they sweet or
yeah,
no?
Yeah. So my new thing is I make the waffles ahead of time, and I toast them and make them really, really crisp. And then you can put this on without it becoming too soggy.
But how sweet...
My initial mode was just to put it on the waffle, but they get really soggy. I didn't like it.
How sweet are your waffles?
It's an issue. I use a quarter of a cup of sugar for 2 cups of flour. So they're not terribly sweet, but they are a little sweet. And actually, for chicken a la king, I probably... You know, I should reduce it to 2 tablespoons at the most. And the other thing is, my waffles have vanilla, and I was thinking about, you know, for the you might want to make, maybe not for chicken a la king, but if you want to make a savory waffle, you might want to add something like smoked paprika, or just paprika, or any number of spices that you could add.
Do you make thinner?
Waffle mixture.
Do you make them thinner or thicker?
I think that would be good. I could go into business with flavored waffles.
You could. You could also just throw in some herbs.
Yes, you could. Absolutely.
And have basically, an herb waffle, which I think would be delicious underneath.
Yes, that's a good idea.
Do you make your waffles thin or thick?
Thick.
Okay.
I mean, I have my waffle iron is a Belgian style iron with very deep. That makes for a crispier waffle, I think.
Well, it gives you crispier outside, and also the Belgian waffles are kind of nice and soft inside as well. I mean, it's the best of both.
Well, you know, I think I've said this before, but there is a recipe for genuine Belgian waffles in my book, New York City Food, and they're yeast waffles, and they're really sensational, and they're like the waffles they served at the 1964 World's Fair. Remember that at the 64 World's Fair, popularized waffles with whipped cream and strawberries, and it was the Belgian pavilion that provided us with this. Those were the real Belgian waffles, but I don't make those. I haven't made them in years because it's a fuss. Mine are fussy enough as it is. Do I have time to quickly give my waffle batter?
Hey, you've got about 3.5.
I make it so often.
Yeah, 3.5 for 4 minutes. Go on.
But 2 cups of flour. A tablespoon of baking powder, a good half teaspoon of salt. I like salt. You know, I think it helps a lot. And a quarter of a cup of sugar. Mix all these dry ingredients together and moisten them with 1.5 cups of milk and 2 egg yolks. The other, you're going to need 4 egg whites to beat up into a, foam. Until they hold peaks, and fold your 4 egg whites into this batter. Oh, sorry, I missed the vital ingredient. After you've moistened it with egg and milk, stir in 1 stick of melted butter, and then fold in your 4 egg whites that have been beaten. You will end up with 2 extra egg yolks, and you have to do something with them because you don't want to waste them. I suggest you could make mayonnaise. Hey, it would be great, homemade mayonnaise for your magic chicken. What could be better? Or you could make a custard, bread pudding. I don't know. There's a lot of things you can do with a couple of egg yolks. So that's it. My batter, and then I...
Uh-oh. That's it. That's it. Well, at least we got the batter in. At least we got the whole thing.
He went off the
reservation.
Yes.
Well,
the batter before we lost him completely.
That is this week's edition of Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven.
You want to try? Yeah.
Almost a full edition of it. No, a dead phone is a dead phone.
Some people have backups.
We'll call him and tell him that his phone finally died.
Mid-recipe.
Yes. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven.
Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Groceries on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghshomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.